This is Radio Equal Shock with your host, Alex Smith.
Here is a headline that breaks through the noise. One-third of plant and animal species could be gone in 50 years. Surely that can't be true. A mass extinction in one lifetime? Let's dig into the science behind the headline with an expert author in this study. John J. Weens is a professor in the Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at the University of Arizona. Weens is a reviewer for over 100 scientific journals. He gives presentations all over the world. He is author, co-author, or contributor to almost 200 scientific papers or chapters, and he previously worked with the Carnegie Museum of Natural History. John's specialty is amphibians. From Tucson, Arizona, Dr. Weens, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Well, your new paper was published in the top-tier journal, The Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And let's start with a surprise to me, and perhaps to other scientists. It isn't the gradual year-by-year warming that we see on the charts that kills off the local species. Extreme heat events are the key. Can you explain that to us?
Well, that's not entirely true. It's potentially year-to-year, gradual year-to-year warming, but the point is that it's in the hottest summer temperatures and not in the annual mean temperatures.
Okay, so are you talking about during a heat wave we would see more animals dying off?
It doesn't have to necessarily be a heat wave, but just the hottest temperatures in summer are the main driver.
Okay, because we have seen videos of bats dropping out of trees during Australia's record heat, and we hear about birds falling out of a hot sky.
No, that totally makes sense, yeah.
Okay, so that can happen. But what about mammals? I mean, we regulate our body temperature. What happens to the so-called cold-blooded species, like the lizards you study, when the outside temperature gets way too hot?
Well, they would tend to hunker down. They tend to not be out when it's at its hottest, and that's actually true for a lot of animals.
And how do we know that maximum temperatures were the key to local extinctions rather than things like increased rainfall or maybe an early spring bringing out the insects before the birds arrive?
Sure, that's a great question. So what we did in this study was to take data from lots of previous studies that looked at the distribution of species over time. And so we looked at data from 581 sites all around the world and also 538 species. And what we specifically looked at is sites where species had gone locally extinct. That means they're not found at that site anymore. And what my grad student, Christian Roman Palacios, who's the lead author of the paper, what he did was to get climatic data for the time of the initial survey of the site, of each site, and when it was resurveyed decades later. And from that, he was able to figure out which climatic variables predict whether a site has local extinctions or not. And he looked at 19 different climatic variables, and the strong pattern that he got was that extinctions were most likely at sites where there had been a larger increase in those maximum temperatures of the year, the hottest summer temperatures.
And do we know what the mechanisms are within plants and insects and animals that causes them to die in such numbers, right up to 95% death rates? I mean, how do they die?
And there could be a lot of different things going on. So, for example, we published a paper about 7 years ago that looked at what was driving species declines and extinctions from climate change. And a lot of times it's species interactions. So it doesn't just have to be that they hit their physiological limits and just drop down and die, but it could actually be things like reduced food or increased disease, things like that.
You did not include marine species in this study.
That's right. I didn't, but we did in an earlier study about 4 years ago. I did look at the patterns of local extinction in marine and terrestrial species and found that they are pretty similar.
And what about human incursion, like ripping down rainforests for palm oil plantations or building suburbs out into the wildlands? Isn't that a major factor driving extinction of other species?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a really good point, but that's not what we looked at. We basically looked at what was happening in intact habitats. And in some ways, this is even worse, right? Because we found that even if you keep the habitats intact, you still could get, you know, a loss of up to 30% of the species, right, under an extreme warming scenario. But if you add in habitat destruction, cutting down the rainforest, burning down the rainforest, that's, you know, that by itself could be two-thirds of all species on Earth. Some people have estimated, right? So most of Earth's biodiversity is in tropical rainforests. And so just chopping those down is catastrophic in and of itself.
And your team looks at two possible ways animals, bugs, and plants try to survive climate change. And one way is finding a niche, and that's a key concept throughout your paper. But what is a niche?
For the purposes of our paper, it's simply the temperature and precipitation conditions where they can and do live. So when we talk about a niche shift, we talk about comparing the conditions where they used to live in the initial survey and then new conditions where they're able to survive. So if they're not able to survive the new conditions, they go locally extinct. If they are able to survive, we call that a niche shift.
And you have another new paper in 2019 suggesting that non-native species might be able to make those niche shifts faster, and maybe that would replace some local species that need that space.
Yeah, I think kind of the main thing that I actually got out of that paper is just that species are capable of these really extraordinary niche shifts. And in the case of the non-native species, a lot of them are instantaneous. So basically, it's like throwing a species from the woodlands of eastern North America into the desert, and it survives. And that actually literally happens sometimes. And so that sort of explains why in some cases, you know, species are able to tolerate some pretty impressive increases in temperature. And it may not even be evolutionary. It just means they had the ability to tolerate these warmer temperatures all along. So that explains some of the patterns.
Can humans in our natural resource planning protect niches to reduce extinction even on a hotter planet?
Well, we're talking about climatic niches. I mean, really the main way to do that is to reduce global warming.
Right, that makes sense. Okay, so there are two other well-known responses to climate change we expect many species to take if they can. And one is to head towards the poles, as various birds and fish are already doing. But most species are kind of limited to a second option, which is heading further up the mountains to find cooler spots. Can moving to a higher elevation work for many of the species that you included in your study?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And what we found is that for a lot of the species that did move, about half of them seemed to move too slowly to be able to, you know, survive climate change. But the weird thing is actually out of those 538 species, about two-thirds of them didn't move at all. So it's easy to sort of anthropomorphize and say, oh, the animals should just move up the mountain, but they're not necessarily doing that. In fact, and most of the time, they're not actually doing that. And so our overall conclusion is that, you know, the dispersal doesn't seem to be, based on our data, doesn't seem to be a really important mechanism for preventing local and species-level extinctions.
Well, some things just don't like to leave home, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think that may well be part of it. So like lizards that I study, many times they just, you know, have their favorite rock pile and they're not going anywhere their whole lives.
Well, since mountainsides are going to be smaller space than the plains below them anyway, wouldn't a rush upwards cause crowding and intense competition for available food sources?
Yeah, no, that's definitely a possibility, and we could potentially be looking at sort of novel combinations of species that, you know, where things work out very badly.
And this whole idea of moving towards the poles, I mean, I recall a study, it's a little fuzzy in my mind, but that some trees can only migrate north a few miles in a decade. So a lot of plants and animals are not going to be able to use that as an option, I presume.
No, you're absolutely right. And we, you know, we focus mainly on this upslope dispersal going up a mountain. And that's, you know, you can do that much more quickly, right? So moving north in latitude, trying to get cooler that way, I think is much more difficult because it involves much larger distances.
Did you find that more species will go extinct in the tropics? And if so, is that just because there are more species there to begin with, or is there an added driver about climate change at various latitudes?
So we looked at that, and depending on the climate projections that we looked at, species-level extinctions were anywhere from 2 to 4 times more likely in the tropics than they were in the temperate zone. And what drives that isn't the greater number of species in the tropics. What it is a very interesting property of tropical climates, and that is that they have much lower temperature seasonality. And so this is really easy to get your mind around. So imagine somewhere in the temperate zone, say Denver, Colorado, for example, where I grew up, it gets really hot in the summertime and it gets really cold in the wintertime. Now think about somewhere in the tropics, like a middle elevation in the Andes, like the town of Armenia, where Christian grew up in Colombia, that has sort of a mild, warm temperatures all year long. And so species in the tropics are adapted to a limited range of temperatures. So even a small increase is more likely to kill them.
Radio EcoShock.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith here with Dr. John Weems from the University of Arizona. We're talking about his latest paper, Recent Responses to Climate Change Reveal the Drivers of Species Extinction and Survival. And the results are pretty shocking. So, John, you began your study by analyzing species that have already gone extinct. What makes you think past extinction will be a reliable guide for the future, especially when the climate is likely shifting faster than at any time in recent Earth history?
Well, just to clarify, we didn't actually look at species that have gone entirely extinct. So we looked at the pattern of local extinction. And so we use that, we use those patterns to identify which variables are most important for causing local extinctions. And then we also can analyze the specific temperatures that basically cause these local extinctions to happen. So we figure out how much heat they can take. And so we use that information and we combine that with their dispersal rates. I think we can get a relatively precise estimates of how much extinction there may be in the future.
I guess my problem is there have been a number of scientific studies that have been sort of based on the past. And then when we see what actually happens, whether it's sea ice disappearing or temperatures in Antarctica, things are happening much faster and worse than we expected.
Yeah, no, that's certainly true. And so we tried to look at, you know, a couple of different projections of what future climates will look like. And so I kind of think of this as a choose your own adventure, right? So do we want to lose 16% of the species on Earth or 30% of the species on Earth? And basically it's up to us. It's up to, you know, it depends on what sort of how much climate's going to warm. So our study, it's not the role of our study to determine how much climate change there's going to be. What we're trying to estimate is, given different amounts of climate change that's happened, how many species are we going to lose?
Okay, so the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has proposed in their reports two different pathways. One's called RCP 4.5, and the other, which is the one we're on right now, is RCP 8.5. Did you find a big difference in extinctions if we take that sort of intermediate pathway where we try and pull in carbon and we do better, or the worst one where we don't do anything about this?
Yeah, that's actually the main results of the study is under the RCP of 4.5, we project sort of a mean estimate of 16% species loss. And under RCP 8.5, we project 30% species loss. And those are sort of mean. So they can be under different, you know, individual projections. For example, that could actually be as high as 55%. But the mean projection under RCP 8.5 is 30% species.
By 2070.
By 2070.
Right. So reading your paper, I got the impression that there's a breaking point for these living things somewhere over a warming of 2.8 degrees C, which we do expect by 2070 under our current path. So a lot of things survive up to a point and then die off. Is that how you think it will work?
Yeah, that's particularly for local populations. So we found that with an increase of 0.5 degrees Celsius in hottest summer temperatures, about 50% of the populations that reached that temperature went locally extinct. And then the 2.8, over the 2.8, that's where 95% of the populations that experienced that increase went locally extinct. So that's the 2.8 is the really bad one.
I guess that we have to understand that our whole fixation, I would call it, with global mean temperature is not going to tell us what we need to know about extinctions from this paper.
Yeah, in particular, that's a really great question. So in particular, what we find was that the annual mean temperatures are actually a pretty bad predictor of where you're going to get local extinctions. We actually found local extinctions were occurring more in places that had a smaller increase in mean annual temperatures, but they had a larger increase in maximum summer temperatures.
Another of your 2019 papers explores the options for a mountain lizard, I would call it. What is the story there? Tell us about your friend and what you found.
Yeah, so that's kind of more of an ancient climate change story. So this is looking at the sky islands that we have here around Tucson. So we actually have about 31 mountain ranges where it has this really nice Madrean oak pine woodland. And they're isolated in these 31 different mountain ranges that are called sky islands. So we see it's a sky island or a mountain island surrounded by desert seas. But this, we know that in the past, these species was continuously distributed, you know, so it was at one point occurred in the lowlands and has since become isolated. And so what we wanted to test is, was it isolated by past climate change? So we looked at a lot of different things. We looked at their physiological variables, and we looked at their evolutionary relationships amongst the different mountain ranges, and we even looked at their interactions with another species. And from that study, we inferred that, yes, they probably were widespread in the past and were driven locally extinct in the lowlands by climate change, and that's why they're isolated in these sky islands today.
To be clear, you do not claim that your new paper is an all-encompassing global study, but even in the 538 species chosen, you found a couple of misconceptions in science?
The two main things are is that the we found that the global mean annual temperatures were not a very good predictor of extinction. That was one thing. And then the other thing was the importance of knit shifts versus dispersal. So we found that the knit shifts seem to be much more important for allowing species to survive climate change than dispersal. Those were the two main things.
John Weens, is it possible to expand your methods to the countless creatures all over the globe and to calculate a kind of global extinction prediction for this century?
You know, our paper is sort of a rough attempt at that, and our sampling of species we think is sort of broadly representative. So there's lots of tropical insects, and there's a smaller number of plants and a smaller number of vertebrates. But definitely what's needed in the future is, I think, more studies that take this approach, and but, you know, with lots more sampling of all these groups of plants and animals all over the world based on these surveys over time.
But we are going to get extinctions, local extinctions, and possibly complete extinctions of animals and plants and insects during the lifetimes of many of our listeners.
Absolutely. I mean, these local extinctions are already really widespread. So out of the 538 species that we looked at, 44% of them already had local extinctions. And in 2016, I published this paper with a somewhat larger sampling of species that included marine and freshwater species also, and that was 47% local extinction. So, and this is all already happening.
Would it be correct to say that your research shows that the biggest single threat to the rich tapestry of life on this planet comes directly from climate change?
I wouldn't say that necessarily. I still think that I would say that destruction of the tropical rainforests is really the one thing that could wipe out the largest number of species. And some people have estimated that, you know, if we lose all or most of our tropical rainforests, that's 2/3 of all the species on Earth right there. But the really bad thing about climate change is, you know, so we imagine, so, okay, we need to protect these remaining patches of habitat, right? And that's a great thing. But the problem with climate change is it's really hard to protect things, you know, it's really hard to protect things from climate change, right? So you can, you know, potentially protect a patch of forest from being chopped down, but it's really hard to protect, you know, protect that patch from climate change.
Right, it could just burn down while we're saving it as a national park, and this has already happened in many places of the world.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that the burning of the tropical rainforest is just, like, the worst thing. And what's also bad about that is also that it's also going to accelerate climate change, because those plants, the tropical rainforest is, you know, normally has the potential to suck up carbon from the atmosphere and reduce global warming, but if we just chop down the forests or burn them down, it's just going to increase the rate of global warming.
You know, I got to tell you, I talked to a lot of scientists with some pretty scary news, but the idea of losing almost a third of all the creatures on Earth within 50 years, it was almost too horrible to think about. I thought about not calling you, but what kind of reaction are you getting in the media and from other scientists?
It tends to be, you know, it tends to be very, there's been reports of this as a nightmare study, and sometimes it's a little, you know, it's a little overblown to call it 50%. That's not necessarily, that's kind of a more extreme scenario. But other people have, you know, have called it a not so grim story. And part of the reason why is that, you know, there are these different scenarios, right? And the uncertainty in our estimates come mostly from, you know, what people are going to do in the future. So, you know, if we wanted to stick to the Paris Agreement, for example, this could be 16%. So we could cut that, you know, 30% in half, more or less. So I think what happens next is up to us, up to humans, and, you know, whether we want to live in a dramatically impoverished world in terms of global biodiversity is up to us.
Now, you study frogs and lizards and snakes quite a bit, among other things, and these aren't things that anybody grows in farms and few people eat them, and they're not really popular pets. We don't even think they're that good-looking, so...
Well, they're kind of popular pets.
Can you make a case to us as why we should really care if the amphibians go extinct?
Well, I mean, they already are going extinct. People do keep them as pets. Actually, a lot of people do eat them. But, I mean, so there's a couple of issues there. You know, one is whether it's morally justified for us just to wipe out other species. And, you know, once you say, oh, it's okay to wipe other species off the planet, I mean, it's not a far step to say, well, what about other groups of people? You know, it's where exactly do you draw the line? I bet, you know, just... You know, sort of wiping out the rest of life is a slippery slope, I think. Another thing is, you know, this study that just came out, it's not focused on amphibians and reptiles. Most of the things are tropical insects and plants and lots of birds. And, you know, there's also been a lot of attention focused on bees, for example. I mean, if we lose the pollinators, then we lose a lot of plants. If we lose a lot of plants, that will affect people.
Absolutely. What are you working on next?
So one of the things, so there's lots of kind of ways to take this research in the future, and one of those is to kind of figure out more about the rhyme and reason of who's surviving and who's not. Another really important thing to figure out, as you kind of mentioned before, is to figure out exactly what's happening in these populations that are going locally extinct. So, you know, we sort of had this review paper from several years ago saying it's species interactions, but really we'd like to know a lot more about what exactly is causing these populations to wink out.
We've been speaking with Dr. John J. Weens. He's a professor of ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Arizona. His latest paper is Recent Responses to Climate Change Reveal the Drivers of Species Extinction and Survival. And you can find out more from the Weens Lab, so that's WIENSLab.com, or in my Radio EcoShock blog at ecoshock.org. Professor Weens, thank you so much for sharing your work with us.
Thanks so much. You asked really a lot of great questions, and it's great. You really did your homework, and I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I'm Alex Smith reporting.